Yes.
What happened to the free knowledge or Rama's consciousness after the physical body dies?
The perception of the world in the light of God is missing. Eternal life is the same as it was before. So what drops off is appreciation of the relativity. What drops off it is living. Living drops off, life remains. Huh? Life devours living. Living finds, or living gives rise to life, and life eternal, and life. Yes?
Fulfillment of life between knowledge is intellectual dawning. The man within God consciousness, if they complied with a unified field theory, which would prove that all the relative is unity, would this aid in attaining supreme knowledge?
This is an information. This is an information that all the relative life impulses, energy, are nothing but electromagnetic waves, and then there is another kind of field, the gravitational field, and then the unified field theory will mean that these two are nothing but one absolute. So this will be an intellectual understanding, and intellectually one could feel without doubt that this whole thing is unity. Just like this thing and 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 this thing. So many various things, and now one knows that this is also sap, this is also sap, this is also sap. So the sap and sap and sap, unified field of sap, is all this, all this, all this. But this is intellectual inference. Now this intellectual inference is overshadowed or thrown off when we start enjoying this, smelling this, touching this, because when we are enjoying this, there is no perception of the sap. But in this way, sometimes when we remember that, oh, the flower is nothing but the sap and the leaf is nothing but the sap, then we may feel intellectually that this is sap and sap and sap. But this intellectual conception cannot be a living reality. A living reality means we are seeing the flower, and whatever we are seeing, the flower or this, but the sap is awake, wide awake in our awareness, so that the awareness of the sap is not overshadowed by the experience of the leaf or the flower. This will mean that the sap and the manifested aspect of the sap both are a living reality. They will be a living reality when we perceive the flower as much as we perceive the sap. Not that the perception of the flower overshadows the sap, or not that the conception of the sap fails us to perceive the flower. But the flower and the sap both cognized at the same time, then we would say both become a living reality. And when both become a living reality, when we experience the sap and the petal, sap and the petal, the unmanifest sap and the manifest petal, both when we are experiencing for some time, then alone we can actually perceive how the sap has become the petal. Because we have an eye on the sap and the petal simultaneously. When we have an eye on both the fingers like this, and then only we can perceive what is going on in between the two. What is going on in between the sap and the flower, sap and the petal? What is going on in between the sap and the petal? The process of manifestation. the unmanifest step and the manifested petal, and in between is going on the process of manifestation. And when we experience both together for some time, then it becomes clear to us how the sap is being transformed into a petal. The how, the mechanics of the separation of the two, or the mechanics of the unity of the two, that the petal is nothing but the sap, and the sap is transformed into a petal. Like that, when we live the pure consciousness and the finest relative celestial both together, this is the finest celestial and this is the absolute, both we are experiencing. This is what we mean by saying that both are a living reality. Living reality means a constant perception, both of these. And when both of these are a constant perception, then we would know whether the two are one or whether the two are two. What is the mechanics in between them? And then we know that the celestial is nothing but a projection of the absolute, and that also is nothing but the absolute and absolute and absolute. And then the unified field theory on the intellectual conception, we say, yes, we know that they are two.
After gaining cosmic consciousness, we no longer have a body to come back to. And so we, instead of living life and living, which you said was the fulfillment, we only have life. So what is...
In cosmic consciousness, we have living also.
Right, but I mean after death, it's just all life.
After death.
Yeah. So what is the benefit to us, since it's no longer fulfillment?
For the charm, the means of charm, the body has to be, and when the body drops off, then the charm drops off. Charmness remains. What remains is charmness. Which is the nature of absolute life, imperishable that is, so it continues to be in that state. Time and space, the question is, don't we have a place in time and space when the body drops off? Time and space only are significant with reference to body. With reference to body. And when the body drops off, no question of time and space, if consciousness is held on that infinite level.
It's working. It is said that cosmic consciousness, a man in cosmic consciousness is fulfilled. That a man having attained cosmic consciousness is fulfilled.
Is not yet fulfilled.
Well, he is not.
He is liberated.
Liberated.
Liberation is not fulfillment.
And
see, not coming back is that not enough.
So he doesn't come back in another body.
He doesn't come back, and that's all. Well, but there is no charm in not coming back. There is charm in enjoying maximum out of the present available.
So a man of cosmic consciousness surely would desire to gain God consciousness. No?
And then that desire is significant, because then he can find fulfillment of that desire.
But wouldn't this...
Before cosmic consciousness, desire of God is just too superficial. It has no meaning.
Then wouldn't this desire to attain God consciousness bring him back in another body? Or does not the desire for God consciousness begin before cosmic consciousness is reached, and therefore this desire prevent him from gaining cosmic consciousness?
No.
The two would come together.
No. One gains cosmic consciousness in the midst of all desires. And one doesn't have to put an end to desires to gain God consciousness, cosmic consciousness, because cosmic consciousness is gained by meditation and action and meditation and action and meditation and action. So action is a means to gain cosmic consciousness. And therefore, minimizing desire or end of desire is no help to cosmic consciousness. And having gained cosmic consciousness, then one could, even much before gaining cosmic consciousness, one starts gaining desire of God realization and starts on those advanced techniques to get on to God consciousness.
Could it ever happen that God consciousness and cosmic consciousness are reached about the same time, sort of simultaneously?
It could happen one after the other. A little bit, maybe soon, not very late, but
so their acquisition is more or less simultaneous.
And that is our hope. That with our advanced techniques of crumbling down the stresses more quickly, by the time we have 80-90% of cosmic consciousness, soon we start on the advanced techniques of gaining the efficiency in the celestial field of behavior, and then we step on. It could be.
Vernon has asked me to persist with the point of the cosmically conscious man having desiring to attain God consciousness and therefore being reborn.
The thing is, a roasted seed, a seed which has been roasted. Now, by virtue of roasting, it has lost its ability to sprout. A seed which is roasted, even though for all practical purposes it will look to be a seed, it is a seed, only that it has lost its germinating power. The power to germinate is lost with the roasting of it by the heat of fire. So, by the heat of liberation, the ability to germinate is lost. Now, even if a seed desires that he must come out, it must come out into a tree, it cannot. Once the arrow is thrown, it's thrown, and it can't come back. Once cosmic consciousness is gained 100%, the arrow is gone and it just can't come back. The seed is roasted, it cannot germinate. Liberation has come on. And once we have stepped on the platform of liberation, bondage cannot be entertained. Once we have stepped on to that level, and it's finished. And that is why we hurry up. We don't want to die without God consciousness. And that's why we hurry up. And that is why this procedure of these advanced techniques and these procedures of eliminating the stresses and strains as soon as possible. Years of evolution can be brought about, can be squeezed in a few days or a few weeks. And this is our plan. This is our plan. This is our plan.
Maharishi?
Yes?
You said that in the Upanishads it said, all this is nothing but that, and that is eternal life, pure consciousness, bliss, everything that's good.
Yeah.
Okay. If all this is nothing but that, how can there be suffering and pain and hate and evil and misery?
If all this is sap, how can there be a leaf and a stem and a flower? It is true. Flower is flower, leaf is leaf, stem is stem. One statement of truth. It is true that flower is nothing but sap, leaf is nothing but sap, stem is nothing but sap. And another statement of truth. Both statements of truth are right. So all this world of relative existence, existing in white and black and yellow and red and suffering and joy and greater joy and lesser joy, greater suffering and lesser suffering, all this variety is. It's a direct experience. We just can't say nothing else is there. How can we say this is white and this is green? We have to admit this is white and this is green. But in the ultimate analysis, this green is also greenless sap. This white is also whiteless sap. Unmanifest sap, unmanifest sap. And both are sap and sap and sap. So the world of all relative existence is there. And the world and the state of absolute life eternal is there, and both are there. When an ordinary man leaves his body, it's a very great pain. When a realized man leaves the body, it's the experience of greatest happiness, bliss. Why? Why that difference? Because the state of enlightenment comes by many times becoming unaware of the body. Metabolic rate comes to nil. Million times the metabolic rate has come to nil. And in that state what we had experienced? Bliss consciousness during meditation. Because the state of enlightenment is the result of millions of times getting to that state of pure awareness, transcendental. That means, physically, the body comes to that restfulness and comes to that restfulness and comes to that restfulness. What happens at the time of death? Also the prana becomes, during meditation, the mind becomes finer and finer and finer and finer, and then disassociates itself with the body. Prana also, that is breath, becomes finer and finer and finer and finer, and then eventually in the transcendental consciousness disassociates itself with the body. So the senses, they start, the finer aspect of the senses start functioning, finer, finest aspect of the sense starts functioning, and then the senses remain behind, the area of the senses remain behind, and they they are no more in the transcendental awareness. What is happening during death? The prana is disassociating itself with the body, or from the body, and the mind disassociating itself from the body, senses disassociating themselves from the body. All this disassociation of the subtle body or the inner man has been a habit, and the experience has been when all these disassociate with the body, then bliss consciousness is the direct experience. And therefore, as long as the machinery is functioning with the disassociation of these subtle aspects, the body or the experience is that of pure consciousness or bliss consciousness. So the last experience that the body can give will be of bliss consciousness when the subtle body starts disassociating itself and drops off. This is at the time of death. So the death of an enlightened man is just the same phenomena of transcending and gaining transcendental consciousness. Whereas in the case of others who have not experienced the inner man's disassociation from the body, who have never experienced that, then it is a very terrible thing for the eyesight to disassociate itself with the eyes. It's a very terrible thing for the sense of touch to disassociate itself with the hands like that. It's a very terrible experience of pain, very great, for the sense of hearing to disassociate itself from the ears, from the whole machinery like that. You can imagine how a man cries if his house is not is not insured. If he is not hooked to safety, not insured, then if the house begins to fall and burns away, and if he cries out, and if he sees that, what a beautiful ceiling I made it with such great labor and such great love and this and this, and now it is falling off and falling off and falling off. Everything that he built so dearly and with such great love and joy and labor, all that is falling off, he starts crying at the fall of everything. Such a great pain, very great, at the time of death, for someone who has not known how to disassociate himself from the body. And in transcendental meditation, every time we get disassociated with the body, and that time the experience is bliss consciousness. Great experience. It's like someone whose insurance is much greater than the value of the house. When it begins to burn, he puts a little more petrol there and he enjoys that, because he is going to, it is hooked to safety, so it's no loss. So the experience of the death of an enlightened man is the same experience of transcending as we have when we meditate. So death is bliss to the enlightened, and it's a greatest suffering to the ignorant. This is the difference. And that's why he's always ready to die, doesn't matter what. always ready to die, means he is not ready to die, but he doesn't mind dying any time. Not that he is awaiting death.
During the course, you have spoken of two seemingly slightly contradictory views of the personal God. One view would be that he is the creator of everything within the relative field. The other view would be that he is just the most beautiful manifestation of the Absolute and is no more than just a manifestation of the Absolute as everything else in relative is. Could you elaborate on that, please?
The question about the God, whether he is the creator of the universe or he is the first manifestation of the Absolute, both are the same thing. Because when he or she, Mother Divine or God, whatever, when he is the first manifestation, then all that is created after that, the whole creation, may be said to be coming out of this creator. And he may be attributed the title of the creator, because every creation came out after him, means maybe from him. Maybe he resigned or maybe... So the first manifestation can as well be called the creator. So that point is clear. Yes? The difference in cosmic consciousness and God consciousness is on all levels, intellectual also and emotional also. And apart from the difference being on intellectual and emotional, there is a difference in on the level of living also. On the practical life, there is a difference. Because there is that difference on the level of consciousness. When there is the two states of consciousness are different, then there is a difference on every level whatsoever. Yes? That's why the two names, their characteristics are different. God consciousness has the characteristic of perception in the world in the celestial light. Cosmic consciousness has the characteristic of perception in the world in the ordinary light, waking state of consciousness.
The real problem in my mind is if man can perceive the finest degree of the relative in cosmic consciousness, and the creator is in that finest level of the relative, what's going to stop that man from seeing the creator? shouldn't he be able to see him whenever he would like to?